Time to get on board the telephone line and welcome in Michael Hurley of WBZ in Boston. Hello there, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks, but I'm very confused. Is Tom Brady going to be a part owner of the Dolphins or not? My head is exploding.
It doesn't seem as though Tom Brady is going to own the Dolphins and quarterback them to glory every weekend. Unfortunately, it makes for a good soap opera, but it seems like that's not going to happen now.
And so then, as you wrote today, the biggest thing going is this movie with Jane Fonda.
Yeah, you know, I think people forgot about that. It's going to be a classic romp, a gal's film. I think it'll be a nice night. I'm looking forward to it. I know I personally don't see enough Jane Fonda, Sally Field, Rita Moreno movies these days, so it'll be nice. It'll be nice to catch up.
Does that tell us that you know, maybe Tom Brady's audience, his fan base, is skewing a little older than we thought?
I'm going to be honest. I do not know what it tells us. I can't venture to guess what it tells us. I just don't know.
Other Patriots news, you posted a couple of days ago that you would be fully in support of Mike Vrabel going into the Patriots Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so it's an annual tradition around here. It's three ridiculously qualified candidates get put forth as finalists for the Patriots Hall of Fame, and fans have to make the excruciating choice between three very worthy guys. And this year, with Will Fork, Logan Mankins, and Mike Vrabel, I made the case for Mike Vrabel, one, because he deserves it, and two, because it's his sixth time as a finalist, and that list is only going to get more and more ridiculously crowded. So I think you got to do it. He is, I think, I mean, we're going in the way back story time machine, but when it comes to the Patriots and all that they built, it was built on finding guys that other teams didn't know how to use right, and no one embodies that more than Vrabel. 4 years basically as a backup, you know, part-time player in Pittsburgh, becoming a critical member of three Super Bowl wins in 4 years, pretty great Patriots story. So I think that'll make for a good induction. The only issue I have is if the induction is like it normally is before a preseason game and he has his own job now, it might cut into that, so they'll have to figure that out. But I think he gets my vote this year. There's no wrong vote, but he's my vote.
There's a pretty good backlog, as he suggested there. Why do they stick to just one guy?
Yeah, they're going to have to open that up. I mean, one per year. You had Welker not even get in as a finalist this year. Lawyer Malloy didn't make it to the finalist stage. Bill Parcells, who's always a controversial debate, and there's arguments both ways, didn't make it to the finalist stage. So it's certainly only going to add up and add up and add up as the retired players continue to get on the list. So yeah, I would say I'm not a museum curator. I'm not experienced in that realm, but I would say you're going to want to open up to at least two per year as the years come on here, as all of the dynasty players become eligible.
What do you think their top priority is in the draft, Michael?
What isn't, I think, is the question. I think they're pretty good at safety. We like their quarterback, we think, and they're deep at running back. But outside of that, there's huge, huge needs at linebacker. I think that is somewhere I have my eye on. There's a pretty significant lead on the need on the interior of the offensive line, which you can only talk about on radio for 5 seconds, so I won't go on about the guard need. And then there's the receiver need. You still need playmakers, and I think that's what everyone roots for because it's fun and beautiful. But I would say, you know, to kind of tie in the last conversation, you might remember back when they drafted Logan Mankins, it was kind of a letdown. You know, everyone's watching, everyone's tuned in, like, all right, who are they going to draft? Is it going to be a pass catcher or a running back or someone fun? And they draft a guard, and you just kind of sit there and you have nothing to do for the next 2 hours. But they can be very important, critical parts of the offense. And you know, they just traded away Shaq Mason, was one of those type players. So I would be ready, if not the first round, then in the first three rounds, you know, for the guard pick. But I would think that given how thin they are at linebacker, they don't know what Dante Hightower is doing. Kyle Van Noy is gone. They're in real need there. So to me, an athletic, is smaller bodied but smart middle of the defense type player is where I would go in the middle in that first round pick.
Now, they're flying under the radar a little bit right now with the Celtics playoffs and Bruins getting close, Red Sox start of their season. What's happening with the coaching situation? Have they got a staff put together yet?
Kind of, you know, in March and February, I was kind of like, all right, well, let's see what they do. Let's not get overly concerned here. But the more, with each passing day that there is not an offensive coordinator or anyone with any history and experience coaching offensive players being added to the staff, it really looks like they're going with it. It looks like they're going with Joe Judge, who has 1 year of experience coaching an offensive position that also coincided with the single worst year of Tom Brady's, you know, post 35. career. He had an 88 passer rating in 2019. He has since posted passer ratings over 102. So that doesn't bode well. He was in charge of the Giants for 2 years. They ranked 31st in offense both years in yards and points. So that's your offensive leader. I think Matt Patricia can probably be okay as an offensive line coach if that's where he's used. But beyond that, I think it's going to be a real issue. I think if it comes to a second-year step back for Mac Jones, I'm much more concerned with that end of it than his end of it, because I think that end of it can really submarine his chances for success. So I think, you know, as much as it could be, you know, funny and you goof around at the history, a lot is at stake there, and it doesn't feel like they're setting him up to succeed or the offense. I don't know. I think a lot of the "in Bill we trust" mantra is at stake this year. If things go poorly this year, I think you won't be hearing that really ever again, because that's how important it is to nail this year. It doesn't feel like they're heading that way.
We're talking with Michael Hurley here on Downtown. Now, you wrote about this earlier in the week. How did the Red Sox manage to screw up this otherwise wonderful tribute to Jerry Remy by not making Don Orsillo a part of it?
Yeah, I think it comes down to back in 2015 when they didn't renew his contract and let him go. I don't think they recognized how much Red Sox fans loved Don Orsillo. I remember John Henry showing up at spring training the next year and being asked about it and incredulously saying, oh, people still care about that. and that's sort of the same thought process that I think went into this. You can't have that ceremony without Don involved, even in some small way. A 15, 20-second video on the board is absolutely necessary. And whatever went on behind the scenes, whatever acrimony, whatever bad blood or whatever between the ownership or Nesson and him still exists, it really shouldn't matter for an occasion like that. And it's just kind of sad and ugly that it did. Because, again, he was a very important part of that. Remy was on the TV for 30 years, and Orsillo was there for 15 years of it. And I would argue Remy didn't really become Remy the way that we knew him until Don Orsillo joined the booth, and they managed to bring out certain sides of each other that neither had shown before. So it's just, I think, a sad bummer of a situation. A lot of people cared about it. And I'll tell you, it's the one thing I have in my career several times said things that bring about a lot of responses, say on Twitter and emails. Usually it's not in support of what I said. This time I would say it was like 110% supporting basically what I just said, which is ultra rare, which is say I have nothing to do with it. It's more about how obvious the situation was and how poorly they read it.
Well, tonight they'll be playing the Tampa Bay Rays without their manager, Alex Cora, with COVID, several players. And then they get ready for a big series not too far down the road in Toronto, and they've got guys that can't go. Does this team have a COVID problem?
A little bit. certainly, it feels like, I don't know if sports is heading that way again, where it's going to be, you know, a big headache and big issues. Hopefully not. Hopefully it's a blip. But, I mean, COVID aside, I think they have offense issues. I think they are a team that is not built to win 3-1, 2-1 games. They are built to win 12-8 games, and they are not doing that yet. On the one side of it, you have guys like Trevor Story and Kike Hernandez who will probably get back to their career averages. But on the other side, I don't know. You look at the lineup yesterday when J.D. Martinez is out, how weak it can be. So it's a pretty precarious situation. I almost feel like they're having this year the year that we expected them to have last year. Mm. So maybe, you know, it just goes to show how fortunate they were for things to break their way a few times last year. This is a little bit more of a reality dose, I think.
What about the Bruins? They've been up and down of late. Do they have enough to make any kind of a deep playoff run?
I don't think so, just because of the way the playoff matchup is setting up. You know, even in some of the leaner years, if you knew that you had destined for failure Maple Leafs team waiting for you in round one, it was a good way to jumpstart a nice long playoff run. They don't have that this year. You know, the way they're set up now is to play Carolina, a team that beat them 7-1 and 6-0. I'm pretty sure I might be off by one on there, but a team that has handled them very well this year. If they manage to climb back into the Atlantic, then they get that Maple Leafs team that is not the destined for failure team. There's just a lot of top-level competition in the East with Florida and Carolina at the top of their divisions. With the Rangers, if they end up in the Metropolitan and somehow get through the first round, then they're going to have another bear of an opponent in the second round. So I just don't think this team is built for that. I'm not judging them on the way that they've played without Lindholm and Pasternak. But even with them, I think, you know, they can win these games, but I don't see them, you know, I don't see them being in the position to really go on one of those runs that we've grown accustomed to happening every few years here.
Michael Hurley, WBZ Boston. With us, Michael, thanks as always. Appreciate you stopping by. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, and I should say, I mean, it's a nice sunny day. I feel like I only brought negativity to this call.
No.
It was not by choice. It's just, you know, I have to speak my truth.
That's exactly it. And I hope when we post the interview, people jump on board and follow it like they did your comments about Orsillo.
Yeah, I'd imagine it usually does go like that. People always say I'm right and smart, so I'm sure it'll be in line with that.
Well, we say it here every time. That's why we're always happy to have you back. We'll see you again soon.
Appreciate it. I'll see you.
Thank you, Michael. Michael Hurley, WBZ, CBS Boston, with us on Downtown.